Alright, well, I guess we'll do an intro. I actually looked up the podcast number, so I'm prepared.
Brittany is currently three pandas fighting a tiger, just so you know.
What? Oh, are you talking about Tokyo Jungle?
Yes.
Because my first reaction was that you were talking about Tekken.
I was thinking of World of Warcraft.
That could be too.
Wow, there's a lot of games with pandas in them.
I was thinking of some kind of Hello Kitty game or something.
Oh, no.
Apparently, panda games are their own genre now.
Are we out of guard dog hats?
Do you have any hip-hop shirts?
Not yet. We only have one shirt.
Okay, see, I just got a hip-hop shirt. And I just unlocked the bear, so
nice.
The
only collar we have is like a Girl Scout uniform, is what it's called. But it's like, you know, a school uniform thing. So it's like a scarf with like the little flap that hangs down in the back.
Yeah,
so
I have
that too.
It doesn't
match the rest of the outfit.
Yeah, I love the combinations you can create. Like, I have a shower hat that's like one of those things that looks like a flower that you put on your head.
I have that. That was the first one I unlocked.
We haven't done a podcast in a really, really long time.
Yeah.
We've all been crazy busy, but we're gonna do it. This is episode 169.
Wow!
You don't get to make jokes because there's a one in front of it.
Yeah.
So you don't get to. That's the way it works.
That's why we didn't.
Was that directed at me?
Yes. Yes, it was. Wesley. Jeez. So anyway.
Well, this has already taken a turn.
After all my editing. This is episode 169. We got a little of the old crew going on here.
Yeah, kind
of. We got Jonah back.
Hello.
He's here.
On the show.
Jonah back.
He traded in his baby.
Yes. No, we have a night off. Cora is staying the night at her grandma's. And yeah, I took the entirety of November off to do NaNoWriMo. And I actually won. I wrote 50,000 words.
Nice.
And
did you get like a trophy afterwards?
I'm pretty sure my account says winner on it now, so that's pretty awesome. It does unlock some deals. Like the piece of software I was actually already using for writing in, which is called Scrivener, or I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's actually a really good organizational tool for writing, like if you're writing long form, like books or short stories or scripts or anything like that. And if you one NaNoWriMo, you actually got like a code for like 50% off of the software. Nice. But I already had bought it, so it which is fine, because you know I had been using it for over a month before that, because I actually did a ton of prep work beforehand, which I think is the reason I actually was able to get my word count this time.
Did you use what you had written last year at all?
No, all new.
Cool.
So it's, you know, ideas and storylines and stuff that I had used before, because it's like a novelization version of Here There Be Robots is what I'm working on. So it's very close to being done as a first draft, but it'll need like tons and tons of work. So
cool.
After that,
I want
so it'll be a long time.
I want all kinds of things. I just put a bunch of lorem ipsum text in there. You know,
yeah.
Good to go.
Exactly.
Got all the hot deals.
So it was a good way to get motivated to get some writing done.
I got 50,000 words in too this time out, but I just like cut and pasted the word "the" over and over again.
Right. You could do that unless you're actually wanting to accomplish something. So
nobody wants to do that.
That's what I was trying to do. I didn't just want to win for the sake of winning.
I keep thinking about doing the NaNoWriMo because I have a couple ideas, but then I'm like, but I got to work on my game instead.
Yeah, that's so next year I have like a list of writing projects that I want to do that are, you know, not related to writing about games. One or two of them could potentially be writing games of some sort. Like I want to write a piece of interactive fiction.
Cool.
And there's a friend of ours that's a programmer who has talked to me in the past about doing kind of like a text adventure game that I would be doing the writing for. And I need to kind of touch base with him and see if that's still a thing he wants to do. So we'll see.
Yeah, something like interactive fiction is like you only need a very basic understanding of programming.
Right.
As long as you're not trying to do anything too super tricky.
Yeah, you just all you do is you open PowerPoint and you just like, you know, you get your MS Paint drawings in there and then you tell your little paragraph story, then you click and then it's the next scene. You know, you slap it in a box. And
have you all played Frog Fractions yet?
No, I've heard it's pretty amazing. I played it briefly, but I didn't have time to actually like get into the meat of it.
Yeah, there's a text portion of that that's pretty dang
nice.
Hilarious.
Yeah. There's actually this site that's I've dinked around on a little bit. It's called Inkle Writer. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like a piece of software that's in browser that you use to write basically like choose your own adventure books. Mm-hmm. And apparently it has support for like doing stats, so you can have like some RPG elements in there. So I'm actually curious to like dig into that, and I might do like a little mini project with that just to see if I can actually finish something in it, because I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, so. I think there's a few frameworks for adventure or interactive fiction games that are, you know, it's like I said, it's not too complex. So you might want to try just getting into it yourself. I don't know. Not to step on any toes, but I don't know if you necessarily need your friend to help you with it.
Well, he has some ideas for some making it like usable on iPhone. So.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of that. Like, he came to me with the idea, so
all
right. I don't want to be like, psh, I don't even need you. And then,
no, I don't know how to
program. I forgot.
Also, we have other people on the show, including
we're still girls, I'm sorry.
We're only introduced you.
Well, it's the Jonah Show, starring me.
Yeah. So we also got Adam Malecki.
Hello.
And I did say Wesley's name because, you know, Wesley.
You can't mistake this southern accent.
And then, you know, I'm Jesse and all that.
Jesse is all that.
Any books? I didn't think so.
I've just been writing lots of music. That's kind of like a book.
Kind of.
In a way.
It's a book for your ears.
But not an audiobook.
But not an audiobook. It's got, like, notes in it. But not like notes like you write down.
Some audiobooks have notes in them. They have background music.
Oh. Fair enough.
A little Audible tune or whatever in the beginning of it.
They all got that same old guy that's like, this is Audible.
This is Audible. Okay. I'm your father.
Okay, I've got a question. You guys, some of you guys have played the Walking Dead games, right?
I've only played the first two episodes so far.
Okay, well, that's enough. Have you ever watched something on Hulu?
Yes. Yep. I knew that was going.
You know where I'm going with this?
Yep.
Yeah, Lee is totally the Hulu guy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know it until somebody said that, and now I can't unknow it.
Yeah, I'm always the guy that anytime I'm watching something with anyone, I'm like, oh, that's this guy, because I always can figure out voices for some reason. And yeah, it was freaking me out. I expected him to like turn to me and just look dead into the camera and say, this is brought to you by...
No, I never made the connection until I think you posted it on Twitter that was, I think. Is that where I saw it?
What if The Walking Dead ends up coming on Hulu? That'd be crazy to have an intro.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Hey, remember me? I was in the game.
You are falling down the rabbit hole.
This is CNN.
All right, too many references.
That's true. I've been writing for Geek Exchange. Whoa, I haven't been on since I got that job about 6 months ago.
Wow, been that long, huh?
It has been a long time. But yeah, Geek Magazine picked up a buddy of mine's website that I used to write for, so I kind of got into that full blast, and it's pretty fun. You can get Geek Magazine in bookstores across the land, and the website is accessible to anyone with the internet.
Yeah.
Future, man, it's crazy. But I'm able to do long-form news. I'm open to doing features, too, if I ever have time to do it. But basically, I do 200 to 300-word news posts with a few stupid jokes. So, yeah, it's pretty fun. GeekExchange.com. Check it out.
I've got some news related. You may never again in your life hear news, like actual news related to the Virtual Boy. But I've got some Virtual Boy news.
Yeah?
Yeah. So...
Are you talking about the Nintendo Virtual Boy or Milo?
I don't think anyone's talking. I think Milo is even less popular than the Virtual Boy at this point.
kid.
But yeah, the Nintendo Virtual Boy. There was a game originally when I don't think the system was even out yet, and they were showing like trailers in Target or whatever for this game called Bound High. And anytime I saw it, I was like, "Oh, that looks cool! It looks fun!" And so I wanted it ever since the game the system came out. Never did. Recently, someone not only found a prototype of it, but it was the pretty much the whole game. It was complete, and they made reproduction cartridges of it, and that includes like boxes and manuals that look legit, like Nintendo made them.
Nice.
So yeah, and you can order those. I think it's like Uncle Tusk, like a walrus. Okay. .com. Yeah.
Uncle Tusk, like a walrus. .com.
No, just Uncle Tusk.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, and that's pretty dope. So I ordered one.
Wall R Us Games. Wall R Us Games.
Yeah, Wall R Us. There you go. Thank you. But yeah, I guess Uncle Tusk is the username of the guy who did it. But yeah, so I ordered one as a Christmas present for myself, and I'm stoked. The legality is in question for that kind of thing, but
sure.
I don't think they've gotten any kind of cease and desist or anything. So good. If the developers have noticed, good on them for like not caring.
Right.
Yeah. I doubt Nintendo's going to approach them and go like, "We would like to put your game on Virtual Console," because Nintendo likes to pretend the Virtual Boy doesn't exist, which I don't really blame them for.
Yeah.
And also,
you have a working general public.
Yeah. That implies you have a working Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. Don't mean to brag, but yeah.
Of course. Well, plus they're really cheap on eBay, so anyone who doesn't have one.
No telling how many things, how many of those are that are still in the box somewhere.
Yeah, I think actually a lot of, you can pretty easily get, because like there was, I think a couple of years ago, somebody discovered like a whole warehouse full of.
Yeah, that happened with the Dreamcast. That's so weird.
Yeah.
They're buried under the ET tapes.
Yeah. And, yeah. There you go. Virtual Boy News.
Holy crap. I just looked up on Amazon to see if they had any. You can get a Virtual Boy for $600. I guess it's a new one. Only one in stock. You can get new from other sellers for $499.99 or used for $50.
Well, that $600 one is actually handcrafted for you. That's why there's only one in stock.
And, carved out of gold from the Lonely Mouse.
It's kind of like the Wonder Swan and stuff. Like, there was a time where, back when not every game store was GameStop, like when we would go to Walden Software and they were like clearancing them, and I kind of wish I had grabbed those weird like offbeat consoles back then.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, I remember
system with every game that was ever made for it for like $100.
Yeah, but I remember the Virtual Boy sitting on pallets for $25.
Yeah, but I do remember that the Wonder Swan with a ton of games and like a bunch of import games that they just couldn't move anymore, like just. You know, for I probably like under $200, you could have bought one of everything. But
wow, can you imagine how much like that would go for now on eBay?
I know, it's crazy, because I think even just the console now, like a used one, sells for like 50 to 60, I want to say, for a Wonder Swan. So, I don't know, Neo Geo Pocket Color or one of those, you know, kind of offbeat ones that,
yeah,
card gamers swear up and down is the best thing ever, even though no one owns.
Yeah.
I owned it though, you guys, so come
on. There's always some person who says it's the best ever.
Exactly.
Well, now you can get the Neo Geo X or whatever the crap that thing is.
And yeah, that thing's weird.
I think that actually is out now.
So I've heard. How many are you going to buy?
All of them? No, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know why I would own one, though.
It seems like they're charging too much for it.
Right.
That like, was they don't know their market or something.
When I saw how much it was, I was like, oh, it's the same reason I never was interested in one of the real ones back in the day.
Yeah, maybe that's why they're trying to charge so much, is they think people will pay it.
Yeah, I guess. I guess they don't have to sell as many that way.
Yeah, but, I never got around to purchasing the Virtual Boy, but I did go to the BattleTech Center in Chicago. That was pretty fun. That was virtual reality.
Oh, okay.
That's where the connection lied.
Gotcha.
Like, thanks for that.
And,
and across the way, they had one of those. Remember seeing in Nintendo Power the stand up ones? It was essentially like laser tag, but you're not fully encased, but you got the giant helmet things on and you're standing up in this kind of circle thing. You guys remember seeing those?
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember what that was called, but it was pretty dang neat. It was probably better than Battletech. In Battletech, you were actually in a podcast. You're in a pod.
You're inside a podcast. Whoa.
Yeah. But yeah, you were in this cockpit. And it had all the buttons and everything. That was fun too. They did it up with a whole show.
I wish I could have tried one of those as someone who's a fan of Steel Battalion.
Yeah, I don't even remember like where I saw the stand up one, and I played it once, and it was really weird. And then a pterodactyl picked us up and dropped.
Yeah,
us.
That's the one. It was a weird that was it.
You were actually playing a Tokyo Jungle prototype
in like 20 years ago. Uh huh.
Hey man, when pterodactyls start coming in that game, it is the worst.
I haven't lived that long in Tokyo Jungle. They talk about a game.
Just strap in. You did play that.
Yeah, Brittany is currently playing it in the background, so if you hear the constant stream of profanities, it's because she was getting attacked by a bunch of alligators.
I did hear screaming at one point earlier.
But that game is everything I hoped it would be. Actually, the hardest thing to get used to was that you can't change the camera.
Yeah, that's the biggest complaint that people I've played with have. So we've like when I've played co-op, we've switched off who gets the camera to follow them because it is just strictly overhead on the first player, which is a little weird. But you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. So I went ahead, I got it, and then I played a couple rounds and I immediately bought the DLC because I was like, these guys need more money. So, like, they deserve it. So I bought the pack that unlocks all the extra animals and Robot Dog and Salary Man.
Wow. I need to get on that. I didn't realize they released those.
The only thing about that, though, is like, oh man, when you do it like the totally natural way where like you're a Pomeranian, then you're just like a beagle, then you're, you know, just like it takes so long before you're any kind of giant creature that like doing it the non-DLC route, like having that kind of path makes it when you finally do, like there's a big jump, like you finally get bear and cheetah at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you have to buy them still, but you unlock the path for them. And it jumps from, like, I think wolf to cheetah, and, like, that's a huge jump, because, like, with the size and stuff.
Right. And I think cheetah's like, the fastest of all of them, too.
Right, right. But it's, like, it's very much like, you know, when you're playing that ROM hack of Link to the Past, where you have to do the first dungeon without a sword, and then you get a sword and feel like a god. It's very much like that, where it's, like, you're just these little things that are scared of everything, and then you become a cheetah and just go on a massacre.
Right. Yeah, it's got a good sense of scale, like when you're playing, because I unlocked the baby chick that you can play as, and it is so hard to do anything because you're slow and you have like no advantage other than being tiny, I guess. I guess you can hide.
No. I'll tell you what your advantage is. You need like no calories to survive.
That's true.
Because when you're a bunch of giant creatures, you need to eat everything all the time or you're constantly like starving.
Yeah, that happened when we used the alligator in the DLC pack, and we were just like, oh my god, the health is the hunger meter is just like flying down the entire time. And playing two player, it's like then you're sharing the food, and it's like, so you have the advantage of you have two people to like fight off guys, but the disadvantage of you have to find twice as much food.
Sure, and like I mean, I'm sure the DLC probably has some of this as well, but like to give an example of the calorie thing, like when you're a cheetah, a cow is one bite.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
A cow. And it's like normally when you're like a smaller animal and you manage to take down a cow, like you're eating on that thing for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
The cheetah's just like, a-goom.
Yeah, and then it's highly disturbing to use the robot dog because there's something about a robot going around massacring a bear, and then there's like blood flying everywhere as he eats it. It's like, wow, he's a literal killing machine. That's his one purpose in life is to massacre other creatures and devour them. and he's never satisfied. He just keeps eating and eating.
Why but, would you need to eat biological matter?
I don't know, but they take out the breeding for the robot dog and the human, because I assume you're supposed to be the last human, because that's kind of the point, is there aren't humans left.
Yeah.
So when you do play as the salaryman, that factor's removed, but you don't die of old age, at least not quickly. I didn't actually live long enough to. So
why are we getting YouTube links and during a podcast?
I don't know. It's like for later. Save them for later.
Yeah, save for later. Come on.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm just saying this episode has a lot of whoop, 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 whoop so far.
Whoa.
Skype noises.
Oh.
Oh.
I have mine turned off, so I don't
know. I have mine
turned
off, too.
I think it got reset when I updated.
Oh,
usually. Skype's sorry. Pretty bad about not saving your settings.
Apologies, good sir. I thought all the noises were disabled.
Nope.
I will refrain from linking anymore.
But anywho, yeah, Tokyo Jungle's pretty cool. What else has people been playing?
Someone else can talk. Yeah.
So, did you guys ever talk about Hotline Miami?
No, I actually haven't played it yet.
I played it briefly. I couldn't get very far. It's really hard.
It is. I played through it twice, actually, because at one point I lost my save and I was trying to unlock like some stuff. So,
it's like fairly short too, right?
Yeah, you can get through it if you're not like rushing through and you're trying to like unlock stuff. You could probably get through it in about 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you can get through it much quicker if you're just trying to beat it to beat it. Plus there's kind of an ending and then there's another ending. So yeah, that kind of complicates the length statistic.
Is there like, I thought I heard there's like a secret ending or something if you play with only the chicken mask, is it? The entire game? Because that's the one that gives you like no special abilities or something.
I don't think that's a thing, but there's an ending achievement or something. There's like an extended ending with more like explanation if you collect all these little puzzle pieces and solve the puzzle.
Okay.
But anyway, when this game was initially announced and like they were doing all the PR for it and whatnot, like I was really not interested at all. Like a lot of one of the developers that made this game's name is Cactus, and well, that's his what he goes by,
right.
Of course. And he's
his Christian name.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of games that are like really short and maybe have like an interesting mechanic, but sometimes they just seem like they're weird for the sake of weird. And I don't know. I had mixed feelings about his stuff. And so not only that, but like the advertising and whatnot, it just seemed like, oh, this game's really violent and offensive and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that was the same reaction I had. I was just like, that was a total turnoff.
Yeah, and
yeah, that's
like,
pretty much why I still haven't played it.
Right. So like I was like, eh. I had the same kind of reaction sort of with Binding of Isaac.
Right.
Which I've now kind of come around a little bit on. But with Hotline Miami, what happened was it came out. I saw like a Let's Play, and I saw like Giant Bomb Quick Look, and I realized like the gameplay mechanics are actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
If you excised all of the storyline and if these were just like little blocks running around and they weren't guns, they were just little pixels, you know, like it would still be a really fun game,
right?
Mechanically. And so I started playing it for the gameplay and I was having a lot of fun with it. And then the story kind of started to get its hooks in, and I found it pretty interesting. The like, without any spoilers, the storyline kind of it seems like there is a little bit of weird for the sake of weird in there, but they did actually have a vision for the most part of what the various things mean. And it does go to some interesting places. My main complaint with it is that I'm not a big fan of anti-hero games typically, and
I think that's because a lot of people don't get that an anti-hero doesn't just mean a guy that kills people.
Well, yeah, I, you know, and the
on shot first.
I'm just saying, like, Kratos isn't an anti-hero. He's pretty much just a villain. I mean, he's murdering innocent people left and right.
Yeah, I guess anti-hero is not even the right term for this either. It's there's two characters, main characters, really. One is just a bad person, and the other is he's a bad person, but he's, I don't know, there's more going on, and he's got some morals and some kind of ethics or standards going on there. And so they kind of make you feel a little bit better about the game by introducing that character later on. So yeah, really this is a game that's it made me pretty conflicted initially because I was having a lot of fun with the gameplay mechanics. The story was somewhat interesting, and at some point I just had to let go of wanting of my need to like the main character, just to enjoy the story as it was told and the gameplay. And once they did introduce the second main character, I was like, okay, well, at least this guy has some redeeming values, I guess.
Do you play as him, or just like you just interact with him?
Well, I was trying not to spoil anything, but yeah, you do play as him.
Oh, okay. Well,
but that's not really that big of a spoiler.
I was going to say, that doesn't really spoil anything, at least not to me.
I'm taking it out of my shopping cart right now.
Yeah.
Sale lost. Way to go.
without any kind of other spoilers, there is a part where there is a certain type of people that you kill of a certain type of profession, I'll just say, and I am fond of people of those profession, and
hookers?
No. No. And you can't avoid it in that particular level, and you kill a lot of them, but this is done by the main character that's not at all a good person, really. There's, like, one moment in the entire game where he has like sort of a redeeming moment, and that's it. So yeah, that level was pretty hard for me, but again, I just kind of said, okay, I'm gonna let go of this, enjoy the gameplay, enjoy the story as it's being told to me, not feel like I have to identify with the main character or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem I had with Far Cry 3, because every character in that game that you like, your playable character and the people you're trying to help, they're douchebags.
Yeah, that's I've heard that from other people too. I haven't played that yet, but yeah, this is something that I've had to kind of come to terms with as more and more developers are trying to make a statement. Like this game, like Hotline Miami, straight up has references to like, you know, like, oh, aren't you, you know, you like killing, don't you? And like they're trying to play with the making you feel guilty.
Why is that so many games this year specifically?
Yeah, like Spec Ops, I think, was another.
Doesn't Far Cry do that in a roundabout way too?
Yeah, from what I've seen, I think so.
So it's like there's three games right there in 2012 that are kind of about that,
isn't as extreme as Spec Ops. I did play through all of Spec Ops, but I didn't play. I just rented Far Cry and played maybe a couple hours of it, so I didn't get too far into it. But yeah, it seems like that could kind of be heading in that direction. Maybe.
I just always find it fascinating when there's like a trend that's all, you know, within a very short amount of time of a bunch of games doing like a very similar thing.
I think Spec Ops kicked off that trend, and it actually was pretty poignant, but I didn't play the other ones. I didn't play Hotline.
I think I can explain it to a certain extent. I've seen more indie games that do it than big budget titles, and I think kind of what it comes down to is, you know, people like us, we grew up playing games. And a lot of those games were, like, really more violent than they should have been for the age that we were playing them at. And so we developed kind of this, we became jaded to it. And ideally, the best way for that we could have handled it is to just kind of say, yeah, it's just a game, you know. I'm not that person. you know, or if I am feeling like I am the main character, then I have some sort of morals of like, you know, I think in this case this person should, you know, take out these bad people or whatever. And so because a lot of us grew up with that, now there's a lot of game developers who grew up with the same games and the same mentalities like that. And they feel like when they're making these games that have these mechanics like the games they grew up with, they have to account for the fact that now that they're older, they realize that, you know, violence is, you know, a very tricky thing and it should only be used sometimes, if ever. And so they try to make these games that remind them of the games they grew up with, but then they feel the need to have like a statement in there that says, "But yeah, but like I'm mature and now, and I realize that."
Or, come on, guys.
Or it could be trying to capitalize on something that's popular for sales and then sneaking a message inside of it.
Oh sure, yeah. That's definitely another, you know, more simple. But like I think someone, you know, from what I've seen of like the prototype of Hotline Miami, originally, like, they didn't really have any kind of story. The story came later. The gameplay was there first. And so like, and I saw the developers talking about some games that influenced this game, and those were just straight up like, you know, they were similar mechanics, and they didn't really make any apologies to just like, you know, at least one of them was like, they're Nazis, okay? You know, but yeah, so like this guy basically made a game that was similar to these games that he liked, and then later on he was like, well, maybe I can dial it back by having a story that sort of makes a statement that, you know, someone who acts this way is a bad person or whatever.
This game, for some reason, makes me think of Retro City Rampage. Is it like that at all?
Mechanically, not really at all.
Humor-wise, though, kind of.
What's that?
Humor-wise, has Hotline Miami got a sense of humor at all, or is it just all pretty much wrong?
Not what I've seen so far. Maybe
it's
later.
It's pretty dark. It's got a sense of humor in the way that, like, maybe a Tarantino movie does. That, like, if you laugh, then you're probably just laughing uncomfortably.
It's like top down and you go around and you usually just end up like, so far all the missions I've played have just been like kill all the guys in this building, but yeah, you have to usually like do it in a clever way. Like if you just run in guns a-blazing, you die in one hit too, just like they do. It's basically like Super Meat Boy except top down and you shoot guys or hit them with a baseball bat.
I haven't done a good job of explaining like why the mechanics are fun, and I can briefly do that. Yeah, you're right. It's got the kind of hit retry,
and you're instantly retrying like super quick.
Yeah, so like you'll die a lot when you play this game, it almost is kind of a combat puzzle. The way it works is the most mechanically similar thing I can compare it to is a game I don't actually even like, which is the original like top-down 2D GTAs. But it's really quite different, actually. Each level is inside a different building, typically. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of just like melee weapons or guns lying around, and each like bad guy in the game has, you know, different weapons that they're holding, and you can't always tell what they have on them.
Right, and they'll like, some of them will be patrolling, some of them will be stationary, and
or
if
just
you're
sitting
using
on a couch or whatever.
And if you use a gun, usually like guys within a certain proximity will all come running at you.
Right, so
there's a lot of strategy to it.
So the best, typically what you're gonna want to do is run in, use melee weapons to take out a few guys, and before you go loud, because once you go loud, anyone nearby is gonna, you know, come after you. There are some exceptions. Sometimes they don't hear you for whatever reason. But it makes this really cool, it develops this really cool routine of, you go in, you're trying to figure out, when am I stealthy, when am I going all out, and you switch. When you get good at the game, you switch or kind of organically between the two of like, you know, you rush into a room and you take out these guys, you fire this gun, you run out of bullets, you throw the gun at a guy and knock him on the floor, and then you run over and finish him off. And then, you know, you go to the next room and, oh, there's too many guys in there, so I'm going to have to be stealthy and kind of peek through the door, take out one of the guys, you know, when the others aren't looking, and then, you know, rush in and do my thing. And so it's been, like, in terms of vibe, like, the game takes place in the 1980s, and in terms of vibe, the game's been compared to the movie Drive. And if you watch that movie has a very similar vibe of sometimes there's
is,
just...
Is there an awkward stair-key?
Almost, yeah. Yeah, there's moments in that movie of just, like, you know, really serene or awkward, like, silent moments. And then all of a sudden things just go horrible. And there's, you know, lots of shooting or people getting killed in horrible ways. And so it's... It has this really interesting emotional narrative of knowing of serenity and then excitement and going back and forth between the two. And so, like, mechanically, it's just it's really a lot of fun, and you can kind of explain away some of the you know, feeling like you're playing a super violent game by, like, a lot of the people that you are taking out are, like, supposed to be Russian mobsters, so they're not necessarily good people. But yeah,
what do you overall, say that because they're Russian?
What's that? No, because they're mobsters.
Oh, okay.
There is storyline wise, without spoiling anything, they do address the fact that they're Russian, though. But yeah, so. I really like this game, and I did not expect to like it at all initially. So I do recommend people try it out if they think from a mechanical standpoint that sounds at all interesting to them. I don't think there's a demo yet, but there will be. So yeah,
I don't know if my PC can run it.
It's got pretty high specs. No, I think it. It's one of those that you could run on a calculator if you needed to.
Speaking of calculator, did you guys see that redo of Portal on the Texas Instruments?
I did.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. But in terms of can you run it, actually they do a lot of, like, full screen effects. Like, whenever you're walking around, the screen kind of tilts slightly back and forth, possibly to evoke, like, are you dreaming? You know, are you on drugs?
That what? Been indoctrinated.
Yeah, yeah. So it's got a lot of full screen effects, and so just because it looks primitive doesn't necessarily mean that your system will run it perfectly. But they've released a lot of patches to address bugs and performance issues at this point, so you should be good, I guess.
Yeah, but. I was just kidding. I think I'll be fine. I got a decent laptop.
Yeah. I have a few more to talk about, but we can go to somebody else now.
I bought a Wii U.
Yeah. It's been this long since we've recorded.
It has. the last one that we did was the week before it came out.
Man.
Wow. Yeah.
I've played the Wii U with you once since that happened.
I touched a controller in Best Buy, so we got a commonality.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So how do you feel about it?
What did you say, Jonah?
I said, and then they asked him to leave.
Oh.
Like, we're touching Wii U.
There is a sign. Perhaps you should try it.
Yeah, for some reason in the Best Buy kiosk now, they don't actually have demos up. It's just basically on-screen information about the games.
So yeah, it's lame.
Yeah.
That is weird.
So what are your thoughts?
I like it. I was actually... One of the things that I really enjoy about it is, like... You know how everybody has been saying, like, since it came out, that the secret best feature is the pad play? It is true. It is very, very true. In fact,
Ben Housen come out of retirement just to do that quote.
Oh, everybody's been doing that quote.
The secret best. That was his trademark, though.
Oh, okay.
What is the pad play?
It's playing games on the controller and not actually using the TV.
Oh, I
see.
And
I'll tell you why it's the greatest. Like, today... I had to edit. We recorded a podcast for the Mega Man Network for the 25th anniversary, with the Capcom dudes, and I had to edit it today. And my computer, which is a desktop computer, is on a different floor than my Wii U system, but it didn't matter, and I played New Super Mario Bros. U anyway while I was editing the show.
Nice.
So I, the range on it. Was surprisingly pretty good. Like, I can't play it in every single room in the house, but I, as I just said, was playing it on a different floor in a different room, and it was still completely no latency whatsoever. I mean, it's a platformer. You can't have latency.
I bet you it's only a matter of time before someone like Nyko or whatever makes like a repeater, you know, like a range extender thing too.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Because then it would, there's like, I think there's like one room like at the very, very end of the hallway that it's like that's where it loses signal.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that and I, you know, I can understand like if you live alone, like it might not be that cool of a feature, but like I live in this house with like three other people. Mm-hmm. And so like I have it up in the area, you know, where we kind of all hang out. And you know, I can, you know, play games on the TV and, like, hang out, or if somebody else is like, hey, I want to watch a show or whatever, you know, like, I can just go to the pad, like, and it, with most games, I can do that, you know, mid-game really easily, and then just be playing on the pad, which has its own speakers and headphone jack, and then they can just do whatever the crap they want over there, and I can even, like, switch the inputs on the TV for them because of the global remote features.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I have to wonder why they didn't implement some kind of, like, Wi-Fi functionality so you could technically, like, take this anywhere that you have a Wi-Fi connection and connect to your system.
Well, apparently the Wi-Fi that it is using is, like, a weird version of it. I don't know. One of my roommates was talking about it who's actually, like, into tech stuff because I'm really not. And I think that's, like, what allows it to have the, like, no latency.
Okay. Yeah, but that doesn't explain why they didn't, you know, add support for that as well, though.
Maybe
it was just a matter of cost and the fact that Nintendo seems to be afraid of any kind of online connectivity.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I've been pretty happy with it. I don't have too many games yet. I mean, I got the deluxe set, so I have, you know, I have Nintendo Land, and then I had picked up New Super Mario Bros. U, which I've beaten, and I'm just doing, like, all the secret exit levels and, like, star coins at this point to get the other secret levels. And then, like, later on a impulse buy, I picked up Tekken Tag Tournament 2 with all the, like, goofy extra crap on the Wii U version.
Did you get any super mushrooms yet?
Yes,
I did. Is it like a crazy, like, extra mode?
Yeah, it's
Or is the arcade mode that way?
No,
that would be weird.
No. All the, like, okay, so yeah, Tekken Tag Tournament 2 on the Wii U, it has everything that the other versions have, and then it also has, like, several extra modes, and then a bunch of extremely goofy-looking Nintendo-themed costumes.
Of course.
And
I saw the screenshots. They're pretty amazing.
Right. And, yeah, one of the modes, the one Jonah was referring to, is, like, there'll be, like, mushrooms that make you bigger and smaller or faster or get an invincible star or whatever. And it's just complete goofy madness. I had a friend over, and we played it for a while. Well, we played, like, all the modes, but we were playing that one for a while, and it's just, like, it's, you know, it, obviously it's not something you would ever play, like, in any kind of serious competitive fashion, but it's just, like, a have some beers and have some laughs type of mode, and I like it for that.
It's already Tekken, so there's already bears and stuff, right?
There, yeah, okay, so the training mode on that one, has its own, like, little story, and it's, like, about this, basically there's this, like, corporation that's, like, built this robot that they programmed all their moves into, and then they're like, all right, we're done, let's hit the, like, done button, and then he hits it, and it's the delete button. And it deletes all the moves, and you have to fill the robot with its knowledge, basically. But, like,
funny.
The levels in that training mode are always pretty much the goofiest thing ever. Like, there's one where there's, like, all these Power Ranger guys, like one of them's throwing pizzas at you. there's another one where you're fighting nothing but pandas in increasingly ridiculous costumes, while a bunch of ballerina pandas are in the background. There's one boss fight that ends in an extremely fat Ryu and Ken that you fight. Well, I think for Ken they just, like, did a different costume on Bob. And I don't remember what they did for Ryu. I think they maybe used like an altered version of the sumo guy or something, but anyway, yeah, like all of the training mode, like story levels are just like the weirdest thing. But yeah, it's even that is like its own fun, pretty unique mode. But that's not one of the ones that's only on the Wii U version. That training thing is on all the versions.
Gotcha.
But it also has Tekken Bowl, which I guess hasn't been in it since Tekken 3, I think. Where it's like this is one of the ones that is specific to Wii U. It's like you both stand on one side of like a volleyball court, and you have like this big beach ball that you're doing attacks that like will make it go at different angles, and if you miss, you take damage, or if you get hit by the ball without hitting it back, you take damage, and this really goofy pop song plays in the background that I think is actually singing about Tekken Ball while it's happening.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty much the goofiest game.
Sounds like it.
But yeah, that was my impulse buy. And, you know, I've had enough laughs with it. I don't regret it, even though I'm not much of a Tekken guy.
Sounds like you got your money's worth.
Indeed. But, Nintendo Land I've been having a surprising amount of fun with. Like, I've been playing it with anywhere from 2 to a full 5. I think I've actually have got the full 5 player at one point. And I know, Jonah, you were over. You played a little bit of it, too. And those games, like, especially, you know, the multiplayer-specific ones, are super fun.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I've only gotten to try a couple of them, but what I played was pretty good. We played the Mario, like, hide-and-seek type of thing, where you're one person is Mario, dressed as Mario, and the others are Toads, and you, like, try and not get tagged by the ones that are dressed as Toads. But
oh, is it like the Pac-Man versus?
Yeah, that's what I've heard that is like. I mean, I don't think I've ever actually played Pac-Man versus.
The thing that's neat about that is that, like, all the people that are on the TV have, like, a view, like, basically an over-the-shoulder kind of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what they can see is very limited, and they can't see over all the walls and all this crap. But then, the person who's playing on the pad, it's a completely overhead view, and they have a map of everything.
Yeah.
It shows where everyone is all the time. So, like, they can exploit, like, where everybody's running and, you know, get away.
It's a competitive stealth game, basically.
Yeah, and the people that are chasing, like, the area, all the levels are always divided into 4 colors. So, like, if you're one of the people on the TV and you see, like, oh, he just went into red, you have to, like, you know, yell that to everybody else who's playing on the TV as well, so they know to, like, you know, try and cut him off at the pass, basically.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, awesome party game fun. And that's just, like, one of the games in it. A lot of them are kind of... A lot of the competitive ones are kind of based on similar chase-centric concepts, but different twists on them. Like, the Animal Crossing one, it's, like, the person on the pad is chasing the TV players who are, like, trying to collect all this candy that everyone they collect makes them slower.
Right, yeah, that one was really fun.
But it's really crazy because the person with the pad is controlling 2 simultaneous characters.
The candy makes them slower?
Yes.
Because it's heavy. Like, they're not eating it. They're just carrying these
giant
pieces of candy.
Oh, I was wondering. I was going to go into the diabetic place.
They didn't inhale.
Oh, okay.
You use the 2 different sticks to control 2 different characters if you're using the pad. And then they each have, like, the, you know, L2 and R2 or whatever are tackling with each of the different characters. So it's, like, it's really disorienting at first, but then once you get the hang of it with, you know, a single person, they can, you know, use both their characters to try and cut people off at the pass. And then it's a pretty interesting kind of flip on a similar idea from the other game, but it, like, plays quite a bit differently. And I don't want to run through, like, every single game or anything, there's a hell of a lot of games on there, and some of them have a surprising amount of maps. Like, when we were playing the Luigi's Mansion one, we thought for a very long time that we had all the maps because we played it a bunch of times. We only had like 3 maps with that one, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, the 5th session that we ever, like, started or something, we all of a sudden, like, unlocked 2 more maps for it, which was really weird. I'm not sure exactly what triggered that. But it kind of makes me wonder if some of the other ones have even more maps than we originally thought, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I played the ones you mentioned, and then Balloon. I didn't play the Luigi's Mansion one yet, but the Balloon Fight one was kind of fun too, because it was played like that, except, you know, with, yeah, you kind of just went for like a high score type of thing. That was like a single player one.
Yeah, that, and like, since you're swiping for wind direction,
right,
you kind of have like, I guess, even more control than you did in the original Balloon
Fight.
Yeah,
it's like rather than flapping your arms, you like are dragging your finger, like drawing like which way you want the wind to blow. It's pretty interesting, like, mechanic for it.
Right. And it's like, then, you know, there are the cooperative ones as well, like the Zelda one where one person's arrows and the other person basically are playing Skyward Sword on rails.
Right.
For the combat. And then there's the Metroid one where the person's in the gamepad, person's flying the ship with crazy gyro controls. And the other people are basically playing a third-person Metroid-themed shooter light.
Yeah.
Which, like, that one's pretty cool because you can do both competitive and cooperative versions of it. So there's, like, a whole bunch of stages, but you can also do a verse mode where it's everybody against the ship or just a bunch of people on foot free-for-all.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's got a lot more stuff in it than, you know, I originally thought it was going to. And
so it doesn't feel like just a bunch of mini-games all slapped in there?
Well, I mean, they are essentially a bunch of minigames.
They are, but they're actually pretty fun. Like,
right, right.
Okay.
There's a little more actually, to them. Like, you know, the ones that we especially like I enjoy the competitive ones the best, and, like, you know, we've gone back to them quite a few times, and we're still usually, like, you know, laughing out loud, like, having a crazy time with them.
Okay. So, I'm sorry if you mentioned this already, but have you played the Zombie U yet?
I have not.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in that when I saw that it really has a lot of things in common with Dark Souls.
I've been hearing good things, actually.
Yeah.
But I just don't know, you know, if I'm ready to smash open a head with a cricket bat.
Yeah, it looked pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah.
I think since I'm going to go soon, I should probably do one more, maybe, before I head out. Yeah. So, I actually played through Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah. We got to do some co-op on that.
Yeah, and we got to play co-op. It's funny because you beat the game, in quotes, by getting, like, a certain point, essentially, like, value. Like, every time you play a song, you get, what are they called? Do you remember Rhythmia or something?
Something weird.
And
some weird-ass like Square Enix word.
Yeah, it's just, like, basically your score, like, from all the songs you've ever done added up. And basically you beat the game by getting to just, like, that score to a certain level, which doesn't, I don't think it actually does anything to have beaten the story. It's, like, super, like, not even really there anyway. It's just, like, why is the story in this game?
Weird.
But the game
is
really
fun. Is this, like, rhythm tap?
Yeah, it's a rhythm game on the 3DS, and it plays kind of like, I mean, it has its own mechanics, but, I mean, think of, you know, like, what's that one that was really big on DS that I'm trying
Elite
to think
Beat
of?
Agent?
Yeah, that's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But instead of a bunch of licensed songs, it's, you know, a bunch of Final Fantasy songs. And there's, like, the modes where you go through the game by game, and it has, like, it starts with the intro, and then there's different kinds of levels. There's ones that are, like, the battles, of course, and that one, it's, like, all your guy, like, your four party members are all in a row. And as the notes come on, they go in the four different tracks. And, like, certain parts of the song, like once per song, if you do everything, like, just right, it'll, like, do a summon. And then, like, you know, one of those guys will come out, and then it changes the four tracks down into one. And then there's, like, the ones where you're supposed to be, like, on the overworld map. And those ones, it's, like, one character walking. And, like, the note chart kind of has, like, ones where you have to, like, follow, like, a trail up and down sometimes. And there's, of course, like, directional swipes, which I thought were going to be, like, just up and down and left and right, but they're actually, like, eight directional, you know, like,
and sometimes they spin,
and sometimes they spin up until the point where you're supposed to swipe them, which makes it really hard to, like, you have to kind of,
yeah, the
guess,
only
you know, like,
the only reason I even the only reason I even have any tracks that do that is because I went when we went to PAX, I had it in my 3DS, and I street passed a bunch of people, and they'll give you, like, those randomly generated playlists.
Right.
And
those cool.
I got some from people who would, I mean, I've put a lot of hours into it, but I think the highest that I would usually get of generated playlists were more like in the 60s, and like they had, when I street passed guys, they had playlists that were like level like 90 something.
Yeah, and that
those it's... those were when they got to the spinning notes.
Yeah, and then there's like just in the story mode type of thing, there's ones that are like event tracks where it's basically like the background is a whole bunch of scenes from the game, and those ones are actually kind of cool because like there the note is kind of like flowing around, and then it'll hit like different notes will appear, and that's when you, you know, do what you need to do, like tap or hold or swipe or whatever. But it's it kind of gives you like an overview of like a major event from the game. And it's like, I mean, if you like Final Fantasy music and rhythm games, it's like it's and I do, then it's a really great one for just like picking up and playing a couple songs. But that's never what happens. I'd pick it up and like I'll play a couple songs, and then like 3 hours later I'm like, I should probably go to bed. Because I don't know, something about rhythm games I get really addicted to when they're done.
My only problem with
my
only problem with that, I think I brought this up when I talked about it on the show before, is just like, man, why do they not let you just skip to hard mode? Like, why do they make you play all of story mode on like baby mode?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Like, you have to play them once in the like story mode, and then that unlocks them in the challenge mode. And then in the challenge mode, you can play them on a harder difficulty. And if you get an A or better, then because there's A, and then of course S, which everyone's like, what does S mean? It's in like every game, but
yeah,
full super. Who knows?
Oh yeah, to make it even more confusing, there's also SS.
Oh, I've never gotten SS. You mean in this game or just in general?
I do mean in this game.
Wow, I've never been that awesome, apparently. But, yeah, and then you can unlock, like, an even harder mode, and if you beat all the songs for a game on Expert or whatever, it'll unlock whatever difficulty, it'll unlock that for the story mode, too. So it's kind of like you're going back and forth, but... The thing Jesse was talking about earlier, like kind of like the challenge mode, that's the one with the multiplayer, and then
that's
you...
really the meat of the game.
Yeah, that challenge room. What are they called? Like dark
notes?
It's
the chaos shrine.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then because that's where you can unlock new songs, like at all, like to play in the challenge mode, and also you get you'll sometimes get random drops because there is like items that you can equip, but sometimes guys will drop these crystal shards, and if you get 8 of one color, it'll unlock a new character, which I still have yet to unlock a single new character, by the way, because there's so many and you keep getting them from different colored shards. So I think I have 5 of one of the colors is like the most I've gotten so far. But playing multiplayer, you're both playing the same song, and it was actually really impressive how synced they were, because, you know, we both have to have our volume cranked up to be able to play it, because it's a rhythm game, and usually you kind of expect some kind of lag on, I don't know, multiplayer, I guess because so many games have had terrible multiplayer, I've grown to expect it, but the songs were coming out of both 3DSs, like, perfectly synced, which was cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, it's kind of a necessity. It would really throw you off if they were out of sync at all.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're both just playing the song at the same time, and it shares your health, because if you're missing notes, it will, like, your guys will take damage and stuff. And then, of course, you get, like, points, extra bonus points for playing multiplayer, and then it seemed like guys were dropping those shards way more often when we were playing multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe the Crystal Bears.
Oh.
Didn't know a new Final Fantasy lore, did you?
Yeah.
It's kind of timely that, I mean, I know we talked about it before, but it's kind of timely that it was brought up again, because the iOS and Android port did just come out for it.
$75 for
Right, right. So the weird thing about it is that they're like, the game is free! But then if you actually, like, buy everything, you know, like, so, because the free version, I think, has 2 songs in it.
Right.
And so then once you start buying everything, I haven't done the math myself, but I've been hearing that you end up spending a lot more money than if you just buy it on 3DS.
You pay to download the game, and then you have to pay to be able to boot it up.
Although, you know, with all the DLC that I bought for the game, like, I think that puts it up to, like, 90 songs. Because I think it starts with, like, 50. I want to say it starts with, like, 50-some-odd songs, and then I think there's enough DLC to boot it up to, like, 90. And, you know... I mean, the songs are only
a dollar.
The songs are only a dollar, but when you buy that many of them, that does add up.
Yeah, I don't even want to know how much I've spent on, like, DLC Rock Band tracks, if you want to talk about buying DLC songs.
Exactly.
A game like that probably would work good on the iPhone. The Rock Band on iPhone was surprisingly fun.
Yeah, you should at least download that, just to, like, because you get a couple songs for free. Because then, I mean, it's not like you have to download everything. You can buy packs for a couple bucks that have, like, the songs from a certain game that are basically the levels on the 3DS version that are, like...
How confusing is the story?
Like I said,
I actually forgot that it had one at all.
Okay. Right, till I brought it up.
You brought it up.
Okay, because generally Final Fantasy games are pretty comprehensible to me.
Yeah, but you also you have your little dude. You can pick. You know, you make your party out of a bunch of characters from the various games, and they'll level up and get different moves, and that'll actually help you take out more of the guys in the battle modes and other stuff like. Having higher agility will make you travel farther in the overworld songs, which will make you more likely to get more items. Same with the battle thing. Like, the more guys you can take out in the battle songs, the more likely you are to get the sweet drops, like the shards to unlock
the
other
battle
characters.
Is the battle system kind of like the ones that are in the game? Do you have, like, different things to select? And then you
it's just like playing the song.
Basically,
like, you equip abilities, and, like, some of them will be like, hey, if you get 50 perfect taps, then you'll have done a fire spell.
Right, exactly.
Okay. I wondered if they worked any of that stuff in. It would be funny, though, if you just had a list of dance moves and you clicked one, then you did it.
That would be amazing.
Wait for the sequel.
click Mark Arena.
It's actually really fun, and I think it's been going on sale because of the holidays and stuff. So
you got it on, like, a lightning deal, though, right?
I think so. So it was only, like, 20, and it was totally worth it. Like,
is it straight 3DS, or do they have it for regular DS?
3DS.
Okay,
you wouldn't want it on regular DS. Like, the sound quality. DS has, like, some of the worst... like, I think it's a combination of, like... the chips inside it and, like, the hardware and everything.
Is that one of the complaints with some of the ports of games to it from, like, older games? Is the sound quality is kind of weird?
Yeah. Most games were MIDI, but, like, there would be, you know, certain games like The World Ends With You and stuff, and, like, they always had to compress the music down so much on the DS. And it's like, even you keep in mind, like, the fact
distortion's good, though.
When you keep in mind the fact that they have, like, you know, so many songs and whatnot, like, I remember actually there being an interview saying, like, one of the reasons why they already had, like, DLC available right away is because they actually ran out of room on the 3DS cartridge.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
Should have been in the box.
There's just, like, another cartridge in the box.
They
could do that with, you know, two DS cartridges.
Right. Oh, man, that'd be a little flirty. Be like, oh, no, you only get, like, 50-some-odd songs in the box.
Yeah.
So you're gypped, man.
I kind of, not to completely change the subject, I kind of got hooked on a microtransaction-based game. Jonah, I know you've been playing the new Double Fine joint, right? Middle Manager of Justice.
I downloaded it and played it for a few minutes, and I'm not really big into those, like, management games.
Yeah, see, like, at first I was put off by it a little bit, but I kept on because I was bored, and eventually it hooks into me deep. It really is like you're a middle manager for the superhero company. They really summed it up with the summary, but I played that for several hours, and this is the only iPhone game I've ever came close to getting every achievement on. I think I'm about 4 away from having them all. Like, I'll get up at, like, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, maybe to take my thyroid pill or whatever, and then I'll, like, just sit there and level up heroes forever. I'm obsessed. And I have paid some money to them for that. So
yeah,
I support...
It's fine. It's double fine. You got it. Every once in a while, there's a game like
you
that.
You just said that's fine. That's double fine.
Exactly. That's going to be the name of this episode. Speaking of that, did anyone else follow the Amnesia Fortnite stuff? Because that was pretty cool.
Like, I didn't watch too much of it. I like that early stuff I did.
Yeah, I haven't finished watching all the episodes of the Game Jam thing, you know, that they did, like, the documentary people that were already there because of the Kickstarter, so they just did, like, an offshoot. But it's kind of crazy to see how fast they got some of that stuff together, and it's like, yeah, it's prototypes, but it's still impressive.
Have you
it was,
played
like, two
any
weeks.
Of them, right?
I did, yeah. I briefly played Space Base DF9, which is, like, a... sim type of game where you are building a space station. And I haven't really played it enough to know what the heck I'm doing, so I'm just like building rooms at random, and I'm like, is there goals? Or I guess not, because it's a prototype, but you can like click on the different little characters and it'll give you like their personality and their thoughts on the other crew members and stuff like that. And it's got some funny writing and stuff in it too. And then the other one I played briefly was The White Birch, which is basically like an ICO game, you know, like that style. The controls feel very loose because it's a prototype, but I'm kind of shocked at what they were able to put together in 2 weeks from scratch, because it looks like pretty good already. And I know traditionally these are the Amnesia Fortnite is like what they use to make their new games. Like they'll usually go, hey, this and this game were cool, so let's turn those into full games, like Stacking and Costume Quest and Iron Brigade, basically like all their last several games.
Yeah, the Sesame Street one did as well. Like Sesame Street was based on something else. Yeah, it was before they had the license, I guess, and they just wrapped it around that.
So there's a few more I'm really interested to try. There's one called it's like Automaton or something like that. I'd have to look it up. But they did all this crazy like Tron looking 3D graphics, and you build these robots to like, you know, solve puzzles with and stuff by finding pieces and putting them together. Autonomous is what it's called.
I like robots and I like puzzles.
Yeah, I know. And it's like it's kind of crazy. Like and like a lot of the teams were trying to put together something that was kind of like a standalone experience. Like, in case we never actually get to make this into a full game, let's make something that's actually worth playing, even though it's just a prototype, was the way a lot of them approached it. So there's several more. I think there's five total, so I want to dig into them some more, and then I might I haven't gotten to really write any game related stuff for a while, so that is like on my project list, is to play more of these and like write a little bit about them, because they're that whole process just completely fascinates me. Like,
yeah, it's really cool that they did that.
How you can even put something like that works together in 2 weeks like that is kind of insane to me.
Now, is it still Tim Schafer making the decision which one?
No, he kind of, that's the kind of cool thing, like, for him is, I guess, he just gets to sit back and, like, watch, and, like, if they have questions, you know, he's available for to help people out, but, so he's not in the documentary stuff that much, except for when he pops in to, like, see how everything's going and stuff, but he said, like, the whole idea is it gives all these other people, like, chances to be project leads, and...
Oh, no, what I was asking, like, I know in the past he's decided, like, which game's going into production, like, I thought fan voting, did the fans just decide which would be prototyped, and then...
Oh, yeah. That was kind of the idea, was rather than having them, everyone pitch to him, and then he decides, it was like he was had everyone pitch it to the fans, and then they voted on them. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing was, when you were voting, like, you could vote on as many of them as you wanted.
Just
so,
with money, right?
As long as you donated, it was a humble bundle thing. So like, as long as you donated $1, you know, or whatever, you could vote. So and it helped raise money to basically do the Amnesia Fortnite, because he posted something about, like, because, you know, he's still having to pay salaries while they're taking 2 weeks off from producing products that they're going to get paid for. He said it costs the company like $300,000 to do this, essentially. Because no one's actually producing anything that's currently making them any money. So it's basically just the company takes a hit for it. But it produces things that in the past have become retail products. So it's totally worth, you know, the investment.
But if any of these, like, go for retail, it'll be decided on by them. He's not leaving that up to fan voting, right?
Oh, I would imagine not.
I was going to say.
But it sounds like the way their company has gone with how well the Kickstarter went, that they're trying to stay independent now, because at this point, I think the rights to most of their games have reverted back to them, or they've bought them. Like, they own Psychonauts now, which is cool. Like, they even though it was originally through another publisher.
Right.
And I probably not so much with, like, Brutal Legend, because that was EA, but,
I think they could probably pick the rights up to that pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Kickstarter for $100.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people liked it. I just couldn't get into it. I tried. I don't want to say anything bad about it, because I, like, kind of appreciate what it was trying to do, but it just wasn't for me. They're a company, one of the few companies that I actually am, like, interested in, like, see, you know, I don't usually follow game companies, but
yeah,
theirs is kind of unique, and it kind of fascinates me because they're not like a small independent that has like three people working at it, but they're not like a giant company either.
Right.
Kind of in this weird middle ground that is pretty much normally impossible to sustain. And in fact, they had the Kickstarter thing not worked out. It's one of those, would they have stuck around? Who knows?
Right, yeah.
So it's, yeah, that's kind of why I follow their stuff pretty closely.
Yeah, I love Tim Schafer, so yeah, I pretty much check out anything he does.
So
can I do one in less than a minute?
Okay, yeah, because I got ahead.
He's already done.
Go for it.
So Red Rogue, it's a platformer roguelike that's an unofficial sequel to the original Rogue, where you play as the widow of the main character from that game. And it is really cool. And that it not only weird. Not only that, but it is totally free to download. It is redrogue.net. You go there.
Do you get to loot your husband's corpse?
I don't want to spoil anything about the husband. Okay. So yeah,
I'm looking. There's some animated GIFs that are showing the game at the top of the screen.
Yeah, and it's pretty violent, partly because the guy who made it works for Nitrome, which is a website that does a lot of cool Flash games, and those usually have to be completely kid friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's actually a really good game, and it's multi-platform and it's free. So check it out.
Yeah, it looks like he kind of did the thing where it's like purposely kind of laughable, the amount of violence, because you're stabbing this little pixel guy and then there's like pixelated red flying everywhere on the screen.
Yeah, but the story is actually really interesting, and it's hinted at. It's only hinted at in a way that like Dark Souls did, where it's not like up in your face all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really dig it.
I like stuff like that, how the story's kind of told through the background. The spot, right. The game Spotter on iOS was kind of like that, where you just kind of
they kind of
background stuff.
Because sometimes stuff is cooler when they leave it up to your imagination, you know?
Right.
That's what I really enjoy about most Metroid games.
Yeah.
I have to say most now.
You're referring to the other M.
Yeah, opposite of subtle on that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening, Nintendo. I liked it. I'm just kidding. I didn't play it. Yeah. But yeah, this looks like a pretty cool game. I'll check it out. Yeah. Is the first one still up for free somewhere?
The original Rogue is the game that all roguelikes are based on.
This is like a genre I'm not familiar with. Really,
it's an ancient PC game. So yes.
The Mayans.
Yes, it's free. Yeah.
Was it ever like a retail release? I guess I've never been clear on that.
No, I don't think so. I think it was something that was shared around on like
BBS's
or whatever.
And stuff.
Yeah, BBS's.
Okay. That was the impression I always got from hearing about it.
I don't remember
that being like a retail game.
If I remember correctly, Rogue is a dungeon crawling video game first developed by Michael Toy and Glenn Wickman around 1980.
You're right.
It was a favorite of college Unix systems in the early to mid
1980s. Okay, I gotta go. You guys can keep going. But I gotta head out. So thanks for having me on. Accommodating.
Now I can't remember what I was about to say.
I'm sorry.
My thought up.
I'll catch you guys later.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Peace out.
Yeah.
Good one.
So one thing, I'm not gonna elaborate on it too much because we've already talked the game itself to death. But I finally got to play multiplayer on XCOM without playing randoms. Like actually got to play. One of my roommates just bought it and. He came downstairs and we just had we're actually playing over LAN because it lets you do that.
Which is kind of weird
for a modern game. But yeah, we played like a crap ton of LAN. We played for like several hours, probably like 3 hours straight or something.
Wow,
and
sounds like
we were just having a blast because it's like, you know, they make it really easy to configure your teams. Like, I mean, if you choose an alien, you just choose an alien. But if you choose a soldier, like instead of being all these different like specific soldiers, it's like all these different configurations and like each, you know, whether it's a skill configuration, equipment configuration, or you know whatever, it's like every single thing that you're choosing from like a drop down about this character that you're adding just has its own little point value. And you just, you know, build a team of up to 6 units, which usually we only had like 3 or 4. and it just has to, you know, equal a certain amount of points at the end, which, you know, just like you were playing a miniatures game or something. And, you know, we found that it was, we were able to create, like, crazily different teams, like, pretty much every match, and we were able to, like, make those teams pretty quickly because of the way that the tools are laid out. But yeah,
that's really cool. Why haven't we played that?
I don't know. It's
amazing.
Do you
have something against me?
Maybe. But no, it's so good though, because like since you can combine humans and aliens too, it's like the amount of party configurations is like staggering, because you know you can have like some crazy super psychic soldier and a chrysalid and yeah. You know, like a cyber disc and like, you know, some shotgun guy, you know, but all kinds of crazy crap.
It might be neat if they did like a DLC like challenge mode where you could mix teams like that and it was single player.
It was just like
just like non-canonical, like
just battle missions only type of thing,
right? Or something to that extent. That might be kind of cool, but
I'd buy it. I did buy the Slingshot DLC, but I haven't got to a part where it actually matters because I just started my second playthrough.
See, I'm confused about that. Does it like roll into? Like, since XCOM is kind of randomly generated, do they always roll it into every campaign?
I don't know all the details. I just know that, for the most part, I think it's council missions, specifically.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's, like, an option that you can toggle it on and off after you buy it or whatever. I haven't really looked into it too much, but...
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but I was like, I want to give them more money for XCOM.
Right.
And like, I was about to start... Because my roommate had just bought, you know, that and was talking about it all the time, it made me really want to play it again. Because, you know, I did my initial playthrough, and I beat it on normal, and then... I still hadn't dipped into Classic Iron Man, which was I had always planned for my second playthrough, and now I actually have started that, but I'm only like two missions in or something.
Yeah, I'm kind of conflicted about the Slingshot DLC because I almost want to wait until there's more of them to play through again, just so like I have, because it almost seems like. I haven't, you know, obviously I haven't played it, but it almost seems like that would be out of place in the random generation of the main campaign. And if there was more of those, then it would start to feel more organic. But
I can't say because I haven't run into any yet. So far all the missions I've done have just been like normal, you know, abductions and,
right.
And things like that. But
time will tell, I guess.
Have you tried Classic at all?
Oh yeah, like Classic. I played a good ways into a Classic Iron Man.
Oh, okay. I was curious because wow, the base is you get one building.
Yeah. At some point, I just kind of screwed myself with the choices that I had made, and I decided that I was going to start over.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before I do that. But I hadn't. I mean, I knew you had less buildings, but I didn't realize that you would just only have one satellite uplink, and you don't even have both satellites for it. You just have the one.
Yeah, you have to be a lot more careful. Not to mention, especially when you're playing Iron Man,
right.
You have to be a lot more careful with the classic mode. But I like it. I almost think that's more the way that you should play that game.
Yeah, I that's kind of how I was feeling too, because in normal I got to a point where it was like I think it was because I wasn't losing very many guys and like I was getting all this sweet equipment, like I was getting to a point where things were getting a little too manageable on normal.
Yeah,
it was like a little too comfortable for XCOM, but
I'm sure
classic mode will change all that.
I had a really cool experience with the last mission, but maybe when I was playing on normal difficulty, in that I just totally rocked it in an interesting way. But I don't know if that's spoiler territory for.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily want to get in any details because I really did enjoy the uncertainty of playing that level.
Right.
But I will say that you know, I've mentioned before, like, I had eight dudes that died in normal, and most of them were in that mission, I think. I got out of that, but I did not, like, yeah, most of the deaths for that playthrough were in that one last mission.
Interesting.
Or at least, like, maybe half of them.
Yeah. I lost more guys than that, but I think I did a lot more of trying to capture aliens alive than you did.
Yeah, yeah, we talked a little bit about this.
So, before. Yeah, I that's partly how I lost some of my guys. And I think in the last mission, I only lost one guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I did something pretty tricky. But I'll tell you off the air.
All right.
Yeah.
Strategy games give me a headache. That's the only thing I have to add to.
Speaking of you, Wes, I don't have we had you talk about any game yet? I'm feeling kind of bad now.
Only Middle Manager.
That, and I mentioned Far Cry 3. I've been kind of going through and renting a few things on Redbox just to try out, Far Cry 3 being one of them. I also tried out Hitman Absolution, and I liked it for a while. Then I
yeah,
got
that's
into
what I hear from other
right.
people.
Right. It gets a little too complex for me. Like, there are literally just more than one way to kill a person. That was
always a weird marketing slogan. There's more than one way to kill a person.
More than one way to eat a Reese. But no, like, yeah, there's, like, random things. Like, I couldn't even figure out, like, once I got past the opening stuff, the training mission, and into the first assassination, which is, like, this... like criminal dude that's protected by some dirty cops. It's not a story spoiler or anything. It's all early on. But I kept trying to get him, and like I'm not very subtle about my methods in games like these. Couldn't get him. Like the cops would always get me. Like I think I'd killed him, and then like I would still have somebody end up getting me. But then I found out one of the ways you can get him, there's just a random piece of fish that's like, I guess, poisonous to him, or maybe he's allergic to it, I don't know. But you find that in one area of it, and then you go to area, like if you follow this guy, you'll see the different parts of the map he goes to, and you can put this fish inside of whatever food he's about to buy, and then that guy will eat it, and then he'll die, and that's your subtle way of killing him, where you can get away scot-free. So there's too much. I mean, someone who doesn't have undiagnosed ADD like me might be able to have more fun with the game, but once I got to that point, I was like, I'm gonna take this back to Redbox. But yeah, those are really the only couple of console games, except for the Mass Effect 3. I got the newest DLC for that, and that's pretty good. It's not too much different than any other piece of Mass Effect 3 DLC. It's the one where you go back to the satellite that I'm forgetting right now. That's essentially a more evil version of the Mos Eisley Cantina, where all the thugs go. Totally for spacing on the name, but it's good. I mean, it's basic action, nothing too special. And the only game that I've beaten, I think, within the last 6 months that I can remember right now is To the Moon. I picked that up from GOG on one of the sales. I've been wanting to play that for a while. You guys check that out at all?
Sorry, what did
you say?
To the Moon.
Oh, yeah, I know what that is, but I haven't played it myself.
It's really good. I'm seldom emotionally moved by a game, but this one got me a little bit.
But you are literally crying right now.
Yeah. It's set up kind of like a top-down old-school RPG, but it's not really that. And the gameplay's pretty basic, but the story's really good. You're these two scientists or doctors. You approach a house. You're a part of this team who goes inside of someone's head and can insert any sort of dream or whatever in there. It's almost like an Inception sort of thing. Kind of made me think of that Jim Carrey movie too, and that's another name that escapes me at the moment. The one where they go inside his mind. What is the name of that movie? Do you guys know?
Sorry, I tuned out.
Oh, gee, thanks. Oh, yeah, go ahead and talk about something. I won't listen.
I'm spaced out. It's
basically you play as two people, and you go inside this dude who's dying. You go inside his memories. You're hired by him as he's your client, and you got to go in there and place this memory in his head that he didn't really do, and that's taking a trip to the moon. That's always been his dream.
Sorry, I just realized what movie you're talking about. Eternal Sunshine.
Right. It's kind of got a similar vibe to that, but not so much. I mean, it's not like a romance or anything. Well, I mean, it is a romance, but it's not that blatant.
In the same way.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, you go back, and you have to find links between this dude's memory to go back into childhood to place this dream of going to the moon to make him feel in his head that he's done this. I don't want to give too much away about the story, but you learn more and more about his life, and it's pretty interesting the way it's structured. And yeah, it's worth playing. I mean, you can get it for $10. It's pretty short and supposedly episodic, from what I understand. I don't know if it did well enough to bring forth the second episode. I really hope it does. It's kind of like a cross between an adventure game and like a kind of top down old school RPG, and I really liked it. I've been getting into some of these smaller adventure games. I played Resonance too. That's another game that I think I've beat since the last time I've been on. That's another.
Well, you reviewed that on the site and everything.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did. It's my memory sucks.
Yeah, and don't feel too bad, Wes. I got home at like 5 a.m. Like two nights ago. So if I tune out, it's not you. It's me.
You're still catching up.
I always get that "it's not you, it's me" thing. Usually.
Also, this is the second podcast I've had to do this weekend.
Also, he thinks it's better if you just remain friends.
This is true.
Man, get him from all sides now.
The friend zone.
That and NBA Jam on iOS, which I just got today and I've been obsessed with for the day. So yeah, that's all I can remember. I'm sure there's more, but I won't babble on too long.
Yeah, I finally did pick up FTL, but I actually haven't played it yet, so I have nothing to say.
FTL is dope.
That's what I hear. That's why I had to pick it up. Everybody I know is like pretty much everybody I know has played it, and I was like, oh, it's really good, and for some reason I just still hadn't got around to it, but it's at least installed on my computer. Now the next step is actually playing it.
Oh, one big achievement that I unlocked while being away is that I got my thyroid removed. That's new.
Oh.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Congratulations.
Some people listening to this probably are on my Facebook and see how I always publicly disclose every intimate detail about my life. But the left side of my thyroid ended up being as big as a softball. It was still functioning normally, but we got a nice picture to share if anybody wants to see it, of how far over my Adam's apple was pushed by my thyroid.
Oh,
but yeah,
geez.
Yeah, I got it out. My voice isn't like 100% yet. It's still kind of tight around that area, but definitely not as tight. It was something the size of a softball.
I didn't notice any difference. So.
It's pretty tight. You've been dropping sick rhymes, you know.
Right. I'm a little more hoarse, like talking to an extended period sometimes.
That's just because you're spitting hot fire.
Word.
Yeah. Would somebody give this man a beat?
Yo, my name's Wes, and I like to rhyme stuff. It was surprisingly not painful. Like, I mean, I did Ralph from the anesthesia. I tried to eat too quickly afterward, my voice is, you know, hoarse a little, but it's not too bad. I do know that my mother, who used to always complain that I mumbled, says I'm much more easy to understand now. So I guess I don't know if the mumbling had partial.
I guess that's true.
Was partially the blame of my throat being clogged with thyroid for years. So I don't know, but it's good to get it out.
Yeah, good riddance, I say.
Right, and I didn't get to see it, which was a bummer. Like I could have always used a new softball or made Christmas ornaments out of it or something.
In a jar and name.
Yeah. You gotta put it in a jar. That's the rule.
Right. But, it was so big. Like, I guess they usually take it out in one fell swoop. But since mine was so big, they had to dissect it. Pretty awesome surgery stuff, guys.
Did they bring in a high school science class and have them dissect it?
Yeah, that would have been a good project. But, yeah, I don't really have any other
things
to talk about.
That's fine. We've got – this call's been going on for an hour and 40 minutes, so I think we're
good.
That's
a fair amount of time, so we can just say our goodbyes, I guess.
Yeah, well – you know, hopefully it won't be a million years until we record the next episode, but can't make any promises.
We should have done this Saved by the Bell style where, you know, like after the summer break, they all get together in Zach's bedroom. Remember that one girl?
Just do it for the show.
And then it's back on the beach in the show they had when they worked for the country club. Yeah.
Maybe next time.
Sweet.
We'll try to make it not so long. It's just I've been crazy busy, and so has everybody else. So
I think we did well. We talked about some games.
Yeah. Anywho,
now we're gangsters. Yeah. See.
Anywho, be sure to go to the site wingdamage.com. Get all the latest things. I just recently put up a 25th anniversary Mega Man post talking about all the series, which there's like seven different series of Mega Man. Woo! So that was kind of a big post.
Did you do an expose about the cartoon?
No, I didn't. But, man, there's a lot to say about that thing.
Is that why you didn't talk about Street Fighter Cross Mega Man on the show? Is that you
My God, you're right. Why didn't I talk about that?
I don't know, man.
All right, okay, we can't close this down quite yet.
Okay.
Because I did play this game. And it is pretty great. Have any of you guys played it?
I played a little bit. And
I wrote something about it on Geek Exchange. I didn't get to play it though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's a free download. It's actually made by a fan that approached them at a Evo tournament. I want to say in 2010.
Okay.
I think that's right. Anyway, and then fortunately, instead of getting a cease and desist, like what would normally happen in that situation, they actually like made it an official thing and funded it, even though it is a free game. Like Capcom actually like put money into it,
which is super classy.
Which is really classy. And then they also had, you know, aside from cutting through all the ridiculous amounts of red tape to be able to distribute it through Capcom's own website, they actually had like all kinds of like staff feedback. Like I know Brett, who I actually just podcasted with for the 25th anniversary Mega Man Network podcast, which you should also check out. I had both Brett and Greg from Capcom Unity on that one. Brett did a lot of playtesting of this game and like got a lot of input because he's you know a hardcore classic series guy. So he put, you know, he every time something like didn't feel quite right, like, you know, he would let the guy know and would tweak things and whatnot. So it's like, yeah, it's a fan game, but like it went through a lot of stuff that fan games don't normally go through.
Yeah, it seems like the feel of the game is pretty much spot on. Like I'm no expert on Mega Man, but I played enough to I think I get it, you know.
Yeah, the enemy design in the stages for just like the normal small enemies is like pretty incredible. Like,
yeah, it's creative. I dig it.
I was really surprised by that because, you know, usually like I've played a lot of Mega Man ROM hacks and usually it's just like,
yeah,
you know, like a recolored enemy from another game or something. It's like these are not only are these like very uniquely drawn enemies, but they have really interesting AI patterns and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Like everything seems really creative in the design, and like the level design is the same way. Like there's, you know, each stage kind of has its own little gimmick that's pretty interesting. The only one I don't care for is the Chun-Li stage, which the gimmick for that one is Ninja Gaiden 1 enemy respawning, which is not a thing I enjoy at all. But every other level is great.
And how annoying are those like little like samurai dudes that try to drop down on you in that stage?
Yeah, they. I mean,
they take a bunch of hits. And
they're tricky, but I actually think those guys are pretty cool.
Yeah, they are cool, but yeah.
But yeah, like the boss fights are also super interesting. I know one of the things they're really focusing on with the game was a more reactive AI instead of an AI that got stuck in more patterns.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see that. Although
yeah,
there still is a lot of discernible like patterns. I guess it's just the triggering of those patterns is a little more dynamic than a normal Mega Man game, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
The boss rush on that was, you know how every Mega Man game, like when you're on the last Wily stage, they have like a boss rush first.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my god, that took me so many tries. But yeah, I finally ended up getting through it, and I ended up actually beating it on release day.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think my main problem with it is the lack of like any kind of save or password.
Yeah, that might be part of the initial patch.
Yeah,
but it might not. I tried to get a clear answer out of Brett, and he said that was still kind of up in the air for whether or not that would be in that patch. So, and it's not even really a patch because it's just like an exe file that you download. So you probably just download a new already ridiculously small exe file.
Right, right.
But yeah, like I would agree with you there. Like, I mean, I understand the homage aspect of it where it's like the Street Fighter, you know, continue screen, but you know, I downloaded it at midnight when it came out, fought two bosses, and then I'm like, well, I gotta go to bed, and then I had to refight those two bosses
right,
the next morning
yeah.
because there's no password or save, which is kinda
for
kinda
people
weird.
Who don't have a lot of time on their hands, it's not ideal.
Right, right. But oh man, so I did beat it, but there is a secret way that you can get to an Akuma fight after the M. Bison fight, and you basically have to, I think you have to get a perfect win on like four of the Robot Masters, and it can't be in boss rush mode, and like one or two other things to get him to appear. And then I watched a video of somebody doing it, and then he like got to the Akuma fight and then just instantaneously died.
Wow.
Which I thought was pretty priceless. So yeah, I have beaten it like normally, but I haven't done the Akuma fight yet because that kind of requires a lot of steps to even get to. But right. Yeah, you should totally go download it because it's free. So
it's free, man.
Yeah, and I was just playing on my wired 360 controller because I just plugs right into my PC.
Yeah,
because the spyware that comes with it is very very unobtrusive.
Oh yeah, the official Capcom spyware.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely go check out that. I know they're watching the download numbers of it pretty closely. We were talking about that on the MegaCast. So anyway, I guess with that we will close down the show.
Oh
so,
wait, I upgraded the Windows 8. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, all right. Anyway, so yeah, go to wingdamage.com. Check out the articles that there's one main one that I posted, and then we've got a couple podcasts. I'm actually going to link the Mega Man podcast that we did on Wing Damage as part of the little 25th string of posts. And, you know, the Twitters. Mine is /mainfinger. Adam's is /tidegear. Mm-hmm. Wes's is Wes the Hero, right?
And also /Barack Obama.
Okay.
Just kidding. Didn't mean to get political. But yeah.
And then, you know, offended. Jonah was here, so follow /spambot as well.
Yeah, do it.
Or @spambot.
Don't be a chump.
And with that, I say goodbye.
Goodbye.